Well, good evening. I think we're on the last leg of Bendoa. It's been a journey, this Bendoa. So question 17, it's a very good question. These are the old stories that we hear. We hear that through the ages in India and China, someone was enlightened to the way by hearing the sound of bamboo, and another clarified the heart on seeing the color of blossoms. Needless to say, great teacher Shakyamuni Buddha certified the way upon seeing the morning star. And venerable Ananda clarified the Dharma when the banner pole, signaling the Dharma meetings, toppled. Not only that, but among the five houses after the sixth ancestor, many people clarified the mind ground with a single word or half phrase. Were they definitely only people who had engaged the way of Dzogchen? Couldn't anybody else have this kind of experience? So the footnote talks about these experiences. One student was sweeping when he heard the sound of when a pebble struck a bamboo stalk. And everything fell away. One of them was awakened by coming around a corner on a walk in the country, and there was a whole field of peach trees in full blossom, and he was totally blown away. With Ananda, with the Ananda and the flag, he and Mahakashapa were talking, and Mahakashapa, of course, was Buddha's follower and the one who was inheriting the robe, and Ananda was Buddha's best disciple, even though he had not finally been enlightened. He was the one who memorized everything that Buddha said, and was most faithful and followed him around for 20 years and massaged his feet and made sure he had enough to eat and all of those things. But after Buddha died, he was together with Mahakashapa and they had a kind of debate. And in the Buddhist tradition, he had two flags, one for each debater. And then the one who loses, the flag gets knocked down. And so in Ananda's case, the flag got knocked down, and then it was a question, whose flag was it? And he realized it belonged to both of them, that there was no difference between him and Mahakashapa. So, and there are many more stories like this, lots and lots of them, and they're all different. That's the cool part about it. They're all different. So each of us, all of us, has many different kinds of experiences, some of them deeply meaningful. And they won't be the same as anybody else's. It's kind of tempting to think, oh, well, if I went out to the almond orchards, maybe, you know, something might happen, or where the cherry trees are blooming up around Lodi, you know. But no, it doesn't work like that. It can be something very, very simple. And Dogen said, you should know that through the ages, those who clarified mind by seeing colors are actualize the way by hearing sounds, or each the exact person who exerted the way without vacillating deliberation, and right away they had no secondary person. There was no dualism about it. There was just that one. Now, Kaz's translation of that is, of these, not one had any intellectual thinking regarding the endeavor of the way, and not one was concerned about their self other than their original self. That's very interesting. That's a very famous koan. What is your face before your parents were born? What is your original self? Where did we come from? What is this? So the 18th question is, in the Western heaven, India, and in China, people are inherently straightforward. They're the best. China has the best civilization. And when Buddha Dharma arrived in China, they got it right away. But we're idiots. We're backward. We're inferior. Even lay people of those great countries are better than we are. Everybody here is stupid and narrow-minded. Even if such people as we are do Zazen, how could they actually achieve Buddha Dharma? How could they possibly do Buddha Dharma? How could we do it? We're such idiots. And Dogen says, as you say, benevolence and wisdom have not yet spread to people of our country, who are moreover ignorant and twisted. I like that word, twisted. It's so easy for the mind to become twisted and especially become very self-involved. It becomes very narrow and it's like focusing on a toenail or something. That is so small and so irrelevant. Even if the authentic Dharma was shown to them, the sweet dew of Buddha's teaching would instead become poison. They seek fame and profit and have difficulty dissolving deluded attachments. On the other hand, actualizing and entering Buddha Dharma, or sailing beyond delusion, does not necessarily depend on the intelligence of the human and heavenly realms. Even when the Buddha was in this world, someone attained the fourth stage because of being hit by a handball, while another realized the great way through putting on an ukasa, although both were imbecilic and stupid beasts. So the fellow who was a kind of simple idiot just got clobbered by a ball, and he was being teased, and they told him he would be enlightened by being hit by a ball, and so he believed it, and they did it to him, and he was. Second story is about a woman who, I should say here, I know it a different way, in her past life was a prostitute and put on an ukasa as a joke. And the merit of this, even though it was a joke and had, you would think, no merit at all, that it allowed her to become a nun in the next rebirth. And later she was a nun who became an arhat under Shakyamuni Buddha's guidance. So even a woman who was a prostitute managed to, through a joke, take on the Dharma. These are extreme examples. They're old and famous stories, which are mainly saying, don't give up. You may feel like you're an idiot. You may feel like your past lives are hopelessly poisoned by inability and meanness and badness of all kinds. However, don't give up. The Dharma is right here, right now. It's okay. So Dogen says, however, when assisted by right faith, a pathway for departing delusions does exist. And the footnote says, faith is not a belief in something, but trusting and acting in one's own experience and realization of Dharmic truth. And that is the main message, that you yourself know, you yourself are what it is. He says, wherever the Dharma has gone in the last 2,000, only about 2,000 years since Shakyamuni's teachings, Dogen says, it's permeated 3,000 worlds. We're learning that this mention all through the Buddhist teaching about many worlds and many Buddhas in the many worlds, they are beginning to realize that there are many worlds, that there are many universes. Somebody has just made the discovery that the waves of gravity are real, and because of that, it is true that the Big Bang happened two times, and that therefore there is more than one universe. I can't understand the physics of it, but they're saying it's the most remarkable discovery that has happened ever, really, that our understanding. And I think it's been in the Lotus Sutra for a long time, the many worlds. And each world has a Buddha in it, and each world is a different world, but all efforting in a certain way. If people genuinely practice right with right faith, they all equally attain the way, without distinction between the dull and sharp-witted. And boy, did that mean a lot to me when I first got into Zen. I was so sure that I was dull and couldn't get it in some way, that life was beyond me in some way, and that when I read that, I thought, well, gosh, maybe even dull-witted people can manage also. It was very encouraging to me. No distinction between the dull and the sharp-witted. Our country may not be a land of benevolence and wisdom, and the people's understanding may be foolish, but do not think that they cannot realize Buddha Dharma. All people are abundantly endowed with the true seeds of prajna, only they rarely accept it and have not yet received and used it. And there's that magic word about acceptance. Allowing and accepting. So that's all the questions and answers. So now we can take down the banner. because we've thoroughly learned what these people have evoked from Dogen. And Dogen finishes up by saying that the mutual exchange of questions and answers between guest and host has been disordered and may be confusing. However, the essential meaning of engaging the way of Zazen has not yet been transmitted in this country, so people who aspire to know it must be sorrowful. For this reason, I have compiled some of what I saw and heard in foreign lands, and have written and preserved my brilliant teacher's true essence in order to make it heard by aspiring practitioners. Yet, he says, the Dharma has come to us, it's moved from east to west, and yet philosophical categories and religious rituals are overgrown and entangled so that people are unhealthy in their practice. Instead of that, now using ragged robes and old repaired bowls till the end of this life, tying together a thatched hut by the blue cliffs and white rocks, and practicing upright sitting, the matter going beyond Buddha will be instantly manifested, and the great matter of the study of the one lifetime will be immediately fulfilled. And that the spread of Buddha Dharma throughout the country is awaiting the emperor's approval, but it's coming. So, only do not think that today is the beginning of our spreading the Dharma. Or do not depend upon place or circumstance. Just consider that today is the beginning. That's why I've written this, for bright students who wish to actualize Buddha Dharma and sincere practitioners who wander from place to place like clouds. Written in 1231. So, questions?
What did he mean by students wandering? Like, are they searching for more, or?
That's one tradition, is young monks go from temple to temple and encounter teacher after teacher until they finally find a teacher with whom they have rapport. And then they stay. And if they're really serious, they inherit the temple from the teacher and carry the Dharma through that way. But some continue to travel their whole life. Kodo Sawaki did that. He ended up finally at Antaiji when he was pretty old, but mostly he was called homeless. He called himself Homeless Kodo. And he went and did sesshin all over Japan.
Not because he was searching?
No, just because he was practicing.
That's his practice.
Yeah. So Uchiyama Roshi has written a long, sort of biographical, it's very personal, little set of remarks about some of these questions, not all of them, and mostly emphasizing how important Zazen is to us and to him in particular in his life. So, for instance, he talks about someone who came to Antaiji after he retired from working at the National Railway. And he was in his 60s, and his work at the company was very different from what he had done at the National. Oh, he began to work for a printing company in Osaka. And that work was different from the National Railway. For the sake of the printing company, he had to become a liar. When he was asked to complete something by a certain date, even though he knew it was impossible, he had to take the order. On the appointed day, he had to tell a false story for an excuse. When he made payments, he also had to give false reasons and try to beat down the amount of money even a little. When he entered such a business world, he was seriously afflicted. Then he heard there was a dojo of Sawaki Roshis in Kyoto, and he visited Antaiji. He said, Uchiyama Roshi says, I talked with him about his trouble. I said, Dogen Zenji said in Bondoa that there is no Buddha Dharma in the secular world, and yet there is nothing secular in the world of Buddha Dharma. Why don't you practice Zazen so as to enter the world of Buddha Dharma in which there is nothing mundane? He sat with me right after the conversation and began to sob while sitting. I thought he might go out of his mind, but he didn't. He was thoroughly convinced by what I said and settled down in the world of Buddha Dharma. After that, he practiced Zazen without any doubt while he continued to work for the company. When I had Sesshin, he took days off and sat with me for 3 days every month. He continued to come for practice enthusiastically and often said to the visiting lay people that there is no Buddha Dharma in the secular world, and yet there is nothing secular in the world of Buddha Dharma. So I encourage you to read this back part if you're interested. Uchiyama Roshi, as you know, is a very charming fellow. So he's fun to read and also deeply meaningful at the same time. Which brings up the question of what shall we study next? So there are myriad numbers of things that we could address, and
do we think of working anything on something yourself that's really exciting?
Well, I'm reading a wonderful book Deshi Maru's commentary on the Heart Sutra that's grand, that we're studying, the priest group is studying, and that I read with Paula, and it's very good. It goes through the Heart Sutra phrase by phrase in the Sino-Japanese with very beautiful explanation, very relatively easy to understand explanation. It's not academic at all. It's not intellectual at all. It's very passionate, really, and quite different from anything else you'll read about the Heart Sutra. So we could do that. I would love to go back into that. I'm in it now, and that would be a good one. And we haven't done the Heart Sutra for ages and ages.
It's interesting when you said that. I said, we've done it so many times. Let's do something new. But then, you know, as a teacher, you know it so well, but when you're studying something and it's so exciting for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we could see it through your eyes in a different light.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yeah, that's really how it works. But we have done it many, many, many times, so there's Sando Kai, which we haven't done for a long time. There is a lot of Dogen, including Gyoji, which has lots of stories. That's a fun one to do. Sort of enlightenment stories.
Uh-huh.
About the old guys and their struggles and their encounter with a teacher and what happened between them. There's a whole lineage of people who met and then passed it on in that way of, oh, I get it.
Mm.
And then they have a meeting and pass it on. You can look online and see, you know, all the things that there are also under Zen, Soto Zen. See what other people are studying. There's mountains and rivers and one bright pearl and what else? The Vimalakirti Sutra, which we've never done.
What is it about?
It's about a bunch of bodhisattvas who get together at a layman's house and start kind of teasing each other and teasing Shariputra especially. About their understanding. It's kind of mystical, kind of strange, because they're all filling up this one bare room and having this sort of encounter with each other and trying to best each other with their, to see who has the best understanding. And it turns out that the layman himself, Vimalakirti, really gets it. And they're just full of talk. But the talk is very helpful and interesting. And that's the point, is to bring up all the ways of talking about the Dharma and then seeing in the end that actually you really can't say it completely. You can't say it. So it's very fun. They've made a play out of it at San Francisco Zen Center that they do every now and then. It's very fun. And Manjushri is there, and Shariputra is there, and Vimalakirti, and they have masks and funny robes and things, and they just make a great story out of it. So that's interesting. Well, I will think about it, and I hope you all will think about it, because you know what's out there also, somewhat, and you could find out more. You can just look through the bookstore. We actually have one bookstore left, plus the used bookstores in the Buddhist section, and see what looks interesting. Because modern teachers, of course, have work also. Reb Anderson does, and a number of Zen Center people do, and John Tarrant does. Let's give it some thought and then maybe decide next week.